Well, this hour, we're going to take your phone calls with Don Easterbrook as we talk about his work, evidence-based climate science. Agree with us or not, or him, but we'll take your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Don Easterbrook with us this hour. We'll take your phone calls. Don, first and foremost, where do we pick up your book, people who are, enjoy this kind of topic, evidence-based climate science, where do they find it?
It's available from Elsevier Publishers, and so it can be found probably online at Amazon and various other booksellers, Barnes & Noble and so on, which is probably the easiest way to get it. And it may be also available in public libraries or in university libraries.
So what got you interested in looking at climate change?
I've been doing this my whole life. I started about 50 years ago or so studying global climates from the standpoint of the effect that it had on glaciers. And glaciers turned out to be sort of like big paleo thermometers. When it's warmer, the glaciers retreat, and when it's colder, they advance. And so I started by studying a lot of glaciers all over the world, and then started looking at the isotope footprint, if you like, of temperature in ice cores. And so it's been a life's work for me.
I suspect, Don, that more and more climatologists, scientists, and meteorologists are beginning to agree with theories of people such as you. Is that a pretty good guess?
Well, there, if you want to look at the numbers, there is now a registry which is available online. You can look this up, and there are 32,000 American scientists alone who have a degree in one of the sciences. So they're true scientists, not just people who claim to be a climate scientist.
Right.
And 9,000 of those have PhDs, and they all agree and have signed a statement, as a matter of fact, that CO2 is not a threat to climate, not a cause, fundamental cause of climate change, and not a threat to humanity. So, yes, there are a lot of people, a lot of scientists who don't believe CO2 is a threat.
Let's talk a little bit about solar flares from the sun. One of my campaigns, Don, is to get our power grid insulated because I think if one of these big X flares hits us, we're toast, or an EMP attack, for example, in the atmosphere. But would that have any effect on climate, some kind of solar flare from the sun or burst like that?
Not the solar flares themselves. It's more of a symptom of a deeper ailment than anything else. And the way it works is like this, that during the solar minimum, as we're now just entering, there's a direct correlation with cooler climate. But what happens to the sun is the sun's magnetic field goes down. And right now, the solar index, called an AP index, is down at rock bottom. And what that means is that the strength of the sun's magnetic field is diminished enough so that sunspots diminish and solar flares and solar ejections of various kinds increase. And those are dangerous because if the sun happens to be aimed at the Earth, if you like, when one of these big solar flares happens, then it has a very bad effect on all kinds of electronic communication. You get spectacular aurora borealis and that sort of thing. And these are much more common during this periods of low magnetic field and global cooling. And so it is a threat. It is a threat which is likely to increase in the next 50 years.
When you're talking to people who do not agree with you, is the conversation somewhat civil or do they come at you?
Oh, you would not believe the level of insults.
I would.
They're so bad, I can't even tell you what they are on the air.
Thank you for not saying that.
Personally insulted, and the basic idea is that if you don't like the message, then you attack the messenger.
Yeah.
And so what typically happens in conversations, and the people who are pushing CO2 will not debate people like me. They simply will not do it because they know they're going to get creamed by the facts. And so typically what happens then is they resort to some kind of personal insults or some kind of rhetoric which has nothing to do with the science of it at all. So, yes, I've experienced a lot of that.
All right, let's go to the phones here for the rest of the hour. Rick is in New York, New York. Welcome to the program, Rick. You're on the air with us.
Thanks, George. I'll make it really quick, Don. Anytime somebody's on like yourself or Robert Felix who talks about this stuff and has done extensive studying in it, I ask them if they have seen or know of this thing I'm about to tell you. Right around the time, I can't give you the exact year, right around the time Al Gore came out with An Inconvenient Truth, so I guess that puts it 10 or 15 years ago, there was a program on PBS, which I saw in New York here, and recorded it on my VCR at the time. And it was called, I still remember the name of the program because I watched it a couple of times. It was called The Myth of Global Warming. And what it was about, it was a documentary about a group of climatologists from places like University of Edinburgh, Cambridge University, mostly esteemed universities in Europe. They went down to Antarctica. They looked at very deep ice cores and did extensive drilling, as well as looking at mineral things, too. And they came up with a theory, the bottom upshot of the whole thing, they came up with a theory that these ice ages that we experience or talk about, they're like small ice ages sometimes within a bigger ice age. And the big ice ages, there have been five of them. If you figure the Earth is 4 billion years old, and for 2 billion years, the Earth has had life of one form or another. You know, people would argue with me about that, say a couple of billion years, that there have been five great ice ages during that period. And these ice ages last in the hundreds of thousands of years, from 100,000 to 500,000 years, each of these five great ice ages. But within one of these 100,000-year ice ages, there are periods of like maybe 30,000 years, which is a drop in the bucket when you're talking about 2 billion, where the Earth will heat up for a 30,000-year period. We're in a place where life forms, you know, or can form. But other than that, except for a small amount of territory on the surface of the Earth, over a mile of ice. And I recorded on the VCR, I watched it a couple of times, and then I erased it to make room for some other program, rock and roll or whatever, that I wanted to record at the time. And afterwards, I wanted to see the program again. It never came on. So I called PBS. I told them the name of the program, the approximate date, and they swore up and down on a Bible that they never had such a program.
Wow.
The guy who was supposed to, his name was Clarence or Charles, something like that. I was very persistent about it because I'd watched it a couple of times. I said, look, I'm sure that was the name, The Myth of Global Warming. I said, can you look into it? He said, I can go into the files and the stacks and look into it. Call me in a couple of weeks. When I called the station back, it's going to sound like Conspiracy Alley. When I called back in a couple of weeks, this guy, Clarence or Charles, whatever his name was, that was working at PBS, they said that he had to quit for personal reasons and he was no longer there. And after that, I just dropped the thing and said, well, I'll just watch as the decades roll by. And sooner or later, it's whatever. But I've seen all these crazy things about, you know, tunnels in the Earth and all this stuff. And I figured, and all this stuff about people saying that the Earth is getting warmer and you have to watch the CO2, well, which is all bunk. But I figured if the Earth can do one of two things. It can either go into the sun or go away from the sun. One, you're going to get progressively warmer. The other one, you're going to get progressively colder. Now, if you're the powers that be that run the climate, which would be more preferable to tell the populace if you didn't want to panic? You tell them that it's getting warmer, because if you tell them it's getting warmer, well, if it keeps on getting very warm, you can always build solar things to power air conditioners to grow, you know, air-conditioned fields to grow food. But if you're looking at the prospect within, say, 100, 200, 300 years, of a mile of thick of ice over 90% of the Earth's surface.
That's scary.
How do you grow food? The only way you could do it is if you have like deep tunnels within the Earth, where the Earth is like a constant warm temperature because of the core, and grow fungi and other things. I don't know. It's a crazy theory. The only thing that is fact is what I told you about that, what appeared on the thing, that the Earth had five great ice ages, that they last in the hundreds of thousands of years, and during these ice ages, it could be up to a half a million years in length.
Well, that's true, but you're talking about mini ice ages now, Don, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
You're talking about mini ice ages now.
Well, one of the things that is very well known now is the history of the occurrence of ice ages and how long they lasted and when they occurred naturally, because we have all kinds of means now of dating them with isotopes and that sort of thing. And one of the things you may not be aware of is that the last ice age ended roughly 10,000 years ago or so. And from 10,000 years up until about 1,500 years ago, the climate was actually a couple of degrees warmer than it is right now. And then about 1,500 years ago, the Earth's climate got cold, and we dropped into what's called the Little Ice Age, and which we're just now coming out of. So for the past, hundreds of years, like 700 or 800 years, something like that, and actually a little bit before that, the temperatures were cooler, and we are now thawing out from that at a rate of maybe a degree a century, but we're still not back to where we have been for almost all of the past 10,000 years. And most people aren't aware of that. For the longer periods of time, ice ages generally last in terms of thousands of years, tens of thousands of years, and there's no geologic evidence that they last for hundreds of thousands of years. I don't know of any incidents like that. There are some cases of very, very old evidences of glaciation, but what's really not clear is whether or not they affected the whole Earth or just particular regions which happened to be in the vicinity of the poles at that time. So I hadn't heard of this program that you're talking about, but it doesn't sound like it's based on geologic fact.
Is there a lot of money involved, Don, in believing that climate change is caused by man?
God. Are you kidding? We're talking $1 trillion that's already been spent, probably.
Jeez.
Something like that. And there is a huge amount of money which is involved, because there's going to be a climate summit meeting in December in Paris, and they're going to propose all kinds of rules and regulations, including a world government and things like that. But they're talking about the U.S. contributing something like $200 billion to this CO2 cause to keep us all from perishing.
And of course, you and I will pay for this, right?
Oh, absolutely, we will pay for it. Right now, the National Science Foundation spends about $2.5 billion a year, and it goes entirely for various projects that relate to carbon dioxide and other programs as well. But of that amount, zero goes to people like me, because they will not even consider anything which is in any way criticizing the effect of CO2 on climate change. And the estimate is made that there's another $20 billion spent in the U.S. on various CO2 programs. For example, the EPA hands out tens of millions of dollars all over the place for so-called studies of climate change and CO2. They are mostly just propaganda programs. So the answer to your question, there is a huge amount of money involved.
Next up, we go to Bill in California, west of the Rockies. Bill, I take it you haven't had any rain out there yet, have you?
No, it's still dry.
Jeez. Unbelievable.
Don, I've heard years ago, I heard a statistic, about 10 years ago, there was a volcano active in Africa, and that it was putting out the same amount of CO2 as the entire United States. I wondered if you had an insight into the CO2 put out by the industrial countries, the United States and Europe, and the natural CO2 by volcanoes around the Earth. Do they actually put out more CO2 than the United States and what we make?
I think the answer is probably yes. The expert on that is an Australian geologist called Ian Plimmer, and he has just recently published some results of the amount of CO2 put out by one of the Icelandic volcanoes that erupted not long ago, and not the most recent one, but the one before that. And his conclusion was that you can get from that eruption as much or more CO2 than has been contributed by virtually anything else from one volcano. So volcanoes put a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. I think the answer to your question is probably yes, but I don't have numbers in front of me right at the moment.
What happens next with all of this, Don? I mean, you know, you just mentioned the September meeting where they're going to try to agree on certain things, which probably won't be favorable to us at all. But what happens in terms of climate predictions? I mean, do you see anything on the horizon that is coming our way in terms of more hurricanes or something dramatic?
In terms of extreme weather, no, there's nothing at all unusual or beyond the natural variability. And when you talk about extreme weather, hurricanes, tornadoes, that's big storms, whatever, that sort of thing. And you hear on the news media that these are a result of global warming. You have to ask, what global warming is that? There hasn't been any in 20 years, so how can it possibly be causing the weather extremes we're seeing right now? You know, that's a simple answer to the whole thing. Without any global warming, we're getting these extreme events, and so they can't possibly be caused by global warming. And there's no change in the overall frequency of these extreme events over what's been going on for the past century. So in terms of what's going on, I think it's very likely that the climate is going to cool rather than warm. And the reason I see that is my own work, which projects the patterns into the future based on the geologic record and on what's happening in the sun. Every time we've had a solar minimum, as we are now entering, we have had a little ice age. Every time. And so, you know, it's not a sure thing, but my answer to this whole thing is that, well, we'll wait and see, and Mother Nature will tell us the answer. And so far, over the past 15 years, Mother Nature has been telling us it's not getting warmer, it's getting cooler. That simple.
So what would you say to Al Gore if you had a one-on-one with him, Don?
I think I would probably have a whole lot to say, and most of it would be you need to get your facts straight.
Let's go to Glenn in Easton, Pennsylvania. Easton, Pennsylvania it is. Hi, Glenn. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
In my area here, I don't believe in the global warming thing. In my lifetime, I'm almost 50, and I haven't seen any significant temperature changes. Right? Everything's been pretty kind of steady, except in the 90s, I remember El Nino, like Don talked about. And I was working in the mountains, and it was raining and the coldest, you know, months of the year. But other than that, it's been pretty normal. And, you know, the winters are over here, like Boston got hammered last year. But the only thing, I didn't hear you guys talk about it unless I missed it. I want to know if Don could elaborate on if the North Pole is truly melting down, and if it is, what's the cause of that?
I don't think the North Pole is truly melting down, is it, Don?
No, I've got numbers here right in front of me, and here is the Arctic story. There are no glaciers in the Arctic. It's only sea ice because there's no landmass. You have to have a landmass to have glaciers. So there's only rather thin sea ice, which is a few meters thick, and the temperatures in the Arctic were higher in the 1930s with no CO2 increase than they have been in the past decade. So that there's number one fact. It's been warmer before in the Arctic than it is now, and so you can expect that this is within the range of natural variability, therefore. And the warming that occurred, there was a cool period from 1945 to 1977. From 1978 to about 2000, there was a period of warming.
Hold on, Don. Let's talk more when we come back and take final calls. Science and science fiction writer Jerry Purnell, fighting back, he had a little stroke, is doing much better, and he loves the show tonight. Just sent me an email. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Don Easterbrook, as we're talking about his work and his real good research on evidence-based climate science. And, Don, the clock got us when we were talking about, of course, what else has been going on in this world out there in terms of climate change. And I got to tell you, I think you're spot on.
Well, you know, for me, it's a matter of looking at data. I'm a data guy, and there's a big difference between looking at actual real time data and doing a bunch of model studies or a bunch of theoretical stuff. And so I like to stay grounded in the real facts of what is measurable and what we can tell about real evidence for climate change. So that's where I come from.
All right, let's go back to the calls. Let us pick it up by going to Huntington Beach, California. It's Michael Stern on Coast to Coast. First-time caller. Hi, Michael.
Hi, George. Hi, Don. I'm actually a geological engineer from Toronto. I've moved out here to Southern California. And I noticed something important that you both of you were mentioning at the top of the last hour about how the pollution doesn't really affect climate change. And just right now you're mentioning about theoretical models, and wanted to mention that JPL and the California Institute of Technology recently did a study on the pollution in China and how that's affecting weather patterns in the U.S. and maybe even globally, you know, how the aerosols in the air, because we're not just talking about CO2 here. We're talking about a lot of other hazardous chemicals and aerosols that are in the air that can affect how much condensation occurs and then therefore the severity of certain storms. And I wanted to make something really important here because, you know, a lot of people are associating environmental pollution to climate change, and that may or may not be the case. But what is important is that the environment and the pollution in the environment has a drastic effect on our species here. I've been up to the tar sands in Alberta, and it looks like Mordor up there. Those smokestacks that you were referring to in the last hour, it's not just CO2. The people out there have very, very severe respiratory problems in that area because it's so heavily developed, you know, with the oil sands here in Southern California. There's a lot of people that I've met around here have problems with asthma due to the pollution. And, you know, studies are coming out now that, in fact, environmental pollution is affecting epigenetics and the DNA of humans. And I believe that, you know, environmental pollution, obviously on a more catastrophic level, for example, the Gulf of Mexico oil spill, people are saying that that's affected the jet stream and therefore, you know, certain storms are heading in different directions and affecting, you know, our agriculture and everything like that. So I just wanted to kind of, you know, indicate that environmental pollution, I think, does probably affect it. I mean, we don't have the data right now probably to get some concrete information. You mentioned that we're spending a lot of money, a lot of our tax dollars, and I think that is very important for the U.S. and other global, you know, worldwide nations to be investing in. Just yesterday, a report came out that the taxpayers in the U.S. were paying $4 million per hour on the Afghan war. I mean, I'm an anti-war activist, and I believe that we should be deviating from these insane expenses and focusing on these NASA projects that we heard about yesterday, cleaning up the pollution and maybe, you know, producing a better climate as a result. And maybe the what you're saying in terms of the cold that's coming, this ice age that may be coming may occur maybe in 10 years or in a couple hundred years. We don't really know that. That's true. But keeping the planet clean and using, you know, green energy is, I think, a lot better idea. I mean, driving a, not necessarily a Tesla, but let's say a vehicle that's emitting, for example, oxygen and burning hydrogen is a lot better for a mother walking her baby in a stroller on the street than breathing in those toxic plumes that I'm sure you know contain benzene and all sorts of cancerous chemicals that affect you know us humans here. So
well, see, Michael, you're absolutely correct. Nobody really should be opposed to cleaning up the environment, and we were talking about that earlier, Don, where even you, of course, are a champion to keep the environment clean.
Oh, absolutely. I agree 100% with the idea that we need to be paying a lot of attention and spending more money on cleaning up toxic emissions. That's a totally different question than reducing the amount of CO2. The sad thing is that we and the rest of the world are spending hundreds of billions of dollars trying, without any effect, to reduce the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. And think of the amount of increase in or decrease in toxic emissions that could be obtained if we spent that money, which is being wasted on CO2, in addressing the true environmental problem, which is the emission of toxic stuff. CO2 is not toxic. You need it for life. You can't live without it. And so I agree totally that we are wasting a huge amount of money that could be better spent on reducing real pollution. And think of the amount of money. We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, and some people have estimated so far maybe $1 trillion has been wasted on CO2. Think how much the environment could have been cleaned up in various poor places in the world, in Africa, for example, bringing people clean water, making their food supply more constant, getting rid of a lot of pollution, that sort of thing, that could have been affected and might have saved, actually, perhaps even millions of lives that had been spent for those kinds of remedies rather than wasting it on this chasing of the CO2 ghost.
Let's go to Frank now in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Frank. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, George and Don. And I agree with everything you say. The only problem is the source of all life on Earth is the ocean. And we are destroying the ocean with millions and millions of plastic bottles and all the toxic chemicals that we dump into the ocean every day. We're basically killing our source of life. We're killing the ocean, and we need to stop it.
Well, we do need to stop it, of course. That's obvious.
I'm inclined to agree that what we're doing to the oceans in many cases is unconscionable.
We're killing the oceans in some cases, Don.
Well, I think it's pretty hard to kill an ocean because half of the Earth is made up of water, and so there's a huge volume. But we are doing, I think, significant damage regionally and locally, especially with all of the stuff that's going into the oceans. And again, my message is let's quit wasting all this money on chasing the CO2, and put it into making some real improvements in eliminating pollution both to the atmosphere and to the oceans.
It's Andy's turn now, Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin. Hey, Andy, go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. I'm not a scientist or a climate expert or anything, but my house is on Lake Michigan. It's about halfway between Milwaukee and Chicago, and you could probably imagine I go outside every day in my backyard and I see all kinds of weather and, you know, the currents and everything like that. For about 10 years I've been watching it, and I see a lot of weird stuff out there. Get to see, you know, you're standing on the edge of the lake and it's like you're seeing outer space. It's like you're on the end of a planet, and you see weird stuff. But the weirdest thing is in the last year, Lake Michigan has gone up 2 feet in a year, and the waves are getting humongous, and it's ripping apart the shoreline. It's taking away granite boulders that weigh 10 tons and rolling them all south. And so what I'm wondering is, how could the lake go up 2 feet in 1 year, and is it going to get worse? Is it going to stop? Like, what's going on with that?
I don't know what the numbers are. I would be amazed if the lake Michigan had risen 2 feet in a single year, and I don't know what the source of the water would be, because the Lake Michigan is a pretty big lake, and so it would take a huge amount of additional water to raise it 2 feet. And I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to comment specifically because I don't have any numbers in front of me to see, you know, just what is going on with lake levels.
We need Lake Mead to get higher and higher and higher.
Well, there may be some interesting news, some good news. Lake Mead is way down, and there's no doubt about it. There's a drought in California and drought to various parts of the Southwest. But that's not unusual. There's nothing unusual about the drought in California. As a matter of fact, the past several decades have been the wettest in the past 200 years overall. But there are periods usually of 2 to 3 years when you do get severe drought. It's just, you know, it just happens, and then they're over. They rarely last more than a few years. And there's now an El Nino building within the tropical area of the Pacific. And if that does, in fact, develop, that usually means that California is going to get more rain than usual, and it just might bring an end to the drought. We'll see.
Well, let's hope so. It's been a long time coming, Don. It really has. Keep our fingers crossed. But that's your prediction? You're predicting, this is a national story here, that the California drought will come to an end? Can you say that?
I didn't predict that, no. What I'm saying is that all the indications are now is that there's a relatively strong El Nino building in the tropical Pacific Ocean. And when the strong El Ninos occur, that typically means that California will get more rain than usual. That's as much as I can say.
How long does it normally take after the El Nino truly forms?
The El Nino is forming right now, and so the prediction by various people is that it will continue to build during the rest of the summer and fall, and that it may be a fairly strong El Nino, in which case we can expect that there will be an effect on the climate of Western North America.
Does an El Nino generally bring more rain than a La Nina?
Yes, where California is concerned, certainly. It affects the distribution of rainfall, distribution of temperatures along the west coast of North America. And so during a strong El Nino year, it gets rainier in California. During a La Nina, which is the cold current one, then typically we get the rain up in the Pacific Northwest and California gets drier.
Let's go to San Antonio, Texas now. Rick's with us. Hi, Rick. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
Back in the 70s, on a popular science magazine, on the front cover was written the coming global ice age. And the article inside the magazine talked about different ways to artificially heat the planet. And one of the ways they talked about was actually putting soot on the North and South Pole to absorb the sun's energy. And the author of that article was Michael Mann. Which, I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
I do get a kick out, yes. What that's all about is that the warm period that we experienced from 1915 to 1945 turned cool after about 1945 until about 1977. So in the 70s, the Earth was feeling the effects of this cooling of the climate, and all kinds of people, including the people who have been predicting catastrophic global warming, were saying we're headed for another ice age, and we've got to pour coal dust on glaciers to absorb more heat and that sort of thing. And they were predicting that we were headed into an ice age, and then, of course, in 1 year, the ocean temperatures slipped. And we entered a warm period from 1979 to about 2000. So climate comes and goes. It's always changing, and it has a regular pattern, warm, cool, warm, cool, warm, cool. And we are entirely within the natural range of variability.
Charles is in Los Angeles now. Hello, Charles. Thank you. Good morning.
Yes. Hi, George. Question is for Don. Since about 1977, our government has been dumping barium, ethyl diabromide, aluminum oxide, and crystal quartz powder, which negatively affects our lungs, plus perhaps what comes in from HAARP. What damage has this been doing to our weather, please?
I don't know. It is a simple answer, because you have to look at the volume of this kind of stuff that's going into the atmosphere. What effect it has on various weather parameters, and I just don't know any. I don't have any numbers, any factual material about those kinds of things. So I'm afraid the simple answer to your question is I don't know.
Don, as we look toward the rest of this year, things seem pretty docile so far. The hurricane season extremely low. What's causing that?
That's weather, and weather changes all the time. So the number of hurricanes, the number of tornadoes, and so on, all those sorts of things, goes up and down from year to year. And there's really no particular trend. In fact, if anything, hurricanes are becoming less frequent, as are tornadoes and a number of other extreme events. So if we look ahead to what we might expect, say, for the rest of the year, There are some meteorologists, Bill Gray being one of them in Colorado, who makes an annual hurricane prediction based on a whole bunch of atmospheric parameters. And I haven't seen his prediction for this year, but my impression is that it is nothing spectacular and we're not likely to see a big hurricane season.
Well, I got to tell you, the most exciting news for all of us is what you've said about Southern California. That's really the first I have heard of anything positive that could help them out. Now, in terms of percent, if it's not as big as what you think it will be in terms of the rainfall, you still think they'll still have a nice little sprinkling of water? Please?
And again, you know, this is one of the things about Mother Nature is that you got to wait till it happens, and
that's right.
We'll just have to wait and see. But from now, from the way things look, and based on the past patterns of what happens during an El Nino year, all I can say is that it is likely that California will see some relief if the El Nino continues to develop the way it seems to be now.
Time for one more quick call here. Bernie in Kennewick, Washington. Bernie, go ahead, please.
Hi. Well, I'm a first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
I'm in my 70s, so I've seen a lot of things happen. And I bitterly disagree with your contention that we're going to get cold. And I can give you some examples.
Okay. With only a minute left, and I don't want to cut you short, Bernie, but go for it. Go for it as fast as you can.
Okay. In this West Coast area, I have a cousin in Alaska that builds bush planes, and he's seen the glaciers retreat hundreds and hundreds of feet. I've seen a glacier in Mount Rainier getting near a road. It used to be 50 years ago. They didn't know what they were going to do because the glacier was getting close, and it's retreated so far you can't even see it anymore. And other such examples are winters here. Over the last 15 years or 20 years have gotten warmer. We no longer have sub-zero temperatures in the winter, and we've had record high temperatures over 100 for a week straight and more than that, and it just goes on and on, and the ice cap in the north has shrunk, and the polar bears are suffering.
See, well, in some areas that's happening, no doubt about that, but in other areas it's massive. We are out of time. Don Easterbrook, thank you so much. Evidence-based climate change, that argument and debate will continue. Up next, the new spymasters. Wait till you hear this one.